Flavor Chief threw his empty combat magnet at him. 2 pounds of blued steel. His aim was better with the empty gun than with the full one, and it struck Ryan just below the elbow on his right arm. The pain was so sharp that Ryan's first guess was that one of the bones was broken, and his fingers opened in a neural spasm, dropping his weapon at his feet. Vivar was quick, faster than a man on the ragged edge of defeat had any right to be. Even before Ryan Sigsauer hit the dirt, Vivar was closing in, holding a black-hilted switchblade in his right hand, lunging toward the one-eyed man's belly. Ryan backed away, reaching clumsily with his left hand for the taped hilt of the Panga, drawing it just in time to parry a second attack.
Kill me, man! You fucking bastard! I escape over fence and land through trees and leave you with your guts spilled!
Ryan didn't waste time, energy, or concentration on responding. The slim-bladed knife danced out again, as fast as a desert rattler, and Ryan was just able to parry it with the clumsy 18-inch blade of the heavy cleaver. He had trained himself to shoot and fight left-handed, but he was only too aware of his limitations. The slaver's eyes were like a cornered rat, fiery and crazed. The one-eyed warrior flexed the fingers on his numb right hand, aware that a little feeling was creeping back, and he was recovering movement, which meant a bad bruise, but no break. It was difficult using the weighty Panga left-handed against the switchblade, like dueling against a rapier with a cutlass. Vivar was skillful with his blade, holding it low in front of him, point upward, in the classic knife man's pose, ready for the thrust to the groin and lower stomach, the most difficult to block. Ryan was being forced backward step by step, toward the fence, yielding ground to the dazzling attack, barely holding off the needle's point. He desperately tried to bring some life back to his injured right arm, but it was still painful. His reactions were sluggish. Vivar sensed victory and smiled.
Near fucking end, amigo.
Sweat ran down Ryan's face, seeping behind the patch, stinging the raw, empty socket. He tried to blink it away, suddenly spotting an extraordinary thing. A toddler had been hiding in the hut, and he now came waddling out, plump and naked, holding a barbed hunting arrow, taller than he, in both hands like a spear. The toddler stood staring in bewilderment at the two strange men as they feinted and lunged. Sparks struck from the clashing blades. For a moment, the boy's face puckered as if he were about to start to cry. Then he seemed to change his mind and padded silently toward the man nearer to him, Vivar. Vivar half-turned, slashing toward the toddler's face, missing him by at least 18 inches. The quarter second of stolen time was all that Ryan needed. The broad blade, whetted to a whisper, hacked into the angle of the jaw, cutting through tendons and muscle. Vivar tried to open his mouth to yelp his agony, but the force of the blow had almost severed his lower jaw. Vivar dropped to his knees. Ryan stepped in closer to Vivar, still wary. He picked up the Sigsauer with his right hand, pressed the muzzle of the gun against the kneeling man's nape, and squeezed the trigger. Vivar pitched down in the dirt, and the fight was over. Ryan and his companions chose not to go to the ceremonial sacrifice of the 7 surviving slavers at sunset, preferring to remain quietly in their huts, checking their weapons and recovering from the adrenaline rush of the battle.
You glad you chilled Vivar, lover?
Sure. I'm the number one man when it comes to scraping scum off the planet. But I don't go for this ritual murder.
The slaughter of the slavers had left only 3 dead in the village, one of them Rainflower, and a handful more with minor injuries. Itzcoatl and his elders had been euphoric about the spectacular victory over their hated enemy, and almost came to blows with one another as they traded tales of their own individual deeds of bravery. Itzcoatl insisted on their attendance at the banquet that would follow the butchery, or the gifts to the gods, as he called it. After the killings, the villagers readied themselves for a night of feasting. Itzcoatl, the priests, and the older warriors all wore their richly embroidered finery and their feathered masks, and they brought out the most sacred relic of the village, which was normally kept hidden in a secret place, known only to the elder priest and the chief. It was a full-size human skull, carved from a single huge chunk of veined crystal. Chips of jade were set into the center of the eyes, and threads of pure gold outlined the teeth.
That's one of the most beautiful things I ever saw. It is the skull of the White Warrior with no shadow, as we call it. Only at the most special occasions is it shown. In a couple of days, it is one of our biggest and best holy days, and it will be shown again, the day when Tlazelteotl became pregnant from swallowing the chip of rare white jade and then bore the Sun King of our people.
The table was laid with bowls and platters of fish, duck, vegetables, and fresh bread. Beakers of Oakley rested at every place, along with individual dishes of the fiery honeyed maize, Atoli. Ryan and the others had agreed that they would leave the village at dawn the next day. Their help was no longer needed, and they had nothing more to offer the natives. But they were also united in not telling Itzcoatl until the last moment. It was a great celebration. The women servers were dressed in yellow to show their link to the food. Some of the priests wore their suits of flayed skin, dyed black, their hair matted with fresh blood, smelling of wood smoke and roasted flesh from the sacrifices. Some of the warriors had skulls daubed in their chests in blue, revealing that they had been active in the ritual slaying of the wounded slaver prisoners. Itzcoatl himself wore vivid green. During the magnificent banquet, the village leader three times raised the suggestion that Jack might stay behind with them and continue to give them the undoubted benefits of his own godhead, offering anything to him by way of food or drink or female company. And all three times Jack rejected him, politely but firmly. The chief had taken the disappointment well, nodding silently. He walked out beyond the fires and returned with an embossed silver tray that held a dozen shining goblets. He placed it on the table. Mildred leaned across and read the words engraved on the rim of the tray.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. Must have once belonged to a marine unit back in the pre-dark.
Each of the goblets held the inscription, The Fighting 40th.
This is the finest Oktli we have, brewed and aged in casks of oak for many years. There is no drink better, and now we should take it and all honor dead, and swear to the future, for us all.
He handed the nearest goblet on the tray to Jack, then passed them to everyone at his table, taking the last one for himself.
To Coatlicue, mother of all gods, and to the ever-young warrior Huitzilopochtli, who others have sometimes called the Hummingbird Wizard. They reside with all the gods of our people on the mountain of the star Citlaltlepetl. All united in the place of the gods, Teotihuacan. Now all drink.
Everyone lifted the goblets and drank. At a warning glance from his father, Dean took only a small sip of the burning liquid. The others drained the Oakley, savoring its fire and its sweetness. Ryan noticed that Itzcoatl and the jade-eyed masks of the other elders had all turned to watch Jack, as though they were linked by a single cord. There was an inexplicable tension for those few seconds, which eased the moment the white-haired teenager laid his goblet back on the table, empty. It was an hour or so, shy of midnight. Ryan suggested that they should rise before dawn and get ready to leave, telling Itzcoatl and the other natives of their intentions only at the last moment.
Less argument then. So we could all do with an early night. Any problems?
Don't feel good, Ryan. Gut binds. Sweating. I feel sick. Throat all tight. Headaches is as bad as I can remember.
Could be something you ate or drank, Jack.
You are right on the ball, lady. The god is sick because of something he had drinking.
How's that? What do you mean?
I mean that Jack has been given poison by me. In a half day, the god will be dead.
Poisoned?
Itzcoatl nodded. He had discarded the ornamental mask, but still wore the long ceremonial robes as he moved a couple of steps away toward the door.
You poisoned Jack? Just him? None of the rest of us?
Do any of you feel sick? No. That's your best fortune. We wish no harm to any of you.
Jack moved a few faltering strides toward the chief, resting his hands on the low bed.
Watch you me. Tell me. I'm your fucking god.
That is the answer. Gods speak in questions and answers. We have given you a secret poison for that reasoning. You are our god. We can't let you go from us.
How does it help?